Well, good morning all. Slight change to the plan this morning. What a week that was. A new Prime Minister and a new monarch within a few days of each other. There can't have been too many times in the history of this country that that has happened. Several years ago, we went through a vision discovery process as a church community and very powerfully and clearly were given the vision of being a family and working to support families. Hopefully lots of you here today will remember that. Now, as we're finally moving on from the ravages of COVID, apart from a few individual cases, and that we finally have a team leader in place, hey David, it seemed a good time to consider our values as a family, as a community of believers. Because these values we trust will serve as the vehicle for delivering the vision of God that he's given us and will define much of how to get there. In order to explore our values together, it also seemed good to us to remind ourselves of Jesus' exploration of what it looks like to follow him, what values he expects from his family. All of this we find in Matthew chapter 5 to 7. In what is known as the Sermon on the Mount. In these three chapters, we get an insight into God's rescue plan for the world that is taking place through Jesus. Jesus is making it clear that he has come to confront evil and to restore God's rule and reign, and in time, amazingly, chooses to do this through the creation of a new family, the church. But first, he sets about teaching them what it looks like to live in God's kingdom. In this new season, we'll consider the values at the heart of this revolutionary teaching and how we might embody them as a community, and perhaps what values we might seek to ensure inform our journey going forward. So we kick off today with Matthew chapter 5, verses 1 to 16. Before we examine these nine blessings, well, eight as number nine is pretty much a reworking of number eight. I thought we might first have a bit of fun guessing what today's society might consider its version of what it means to be blessed. What would 21st century beatitudes or blessings look like? Bear with me. Here's my stab. Number one, to be blessed means that you have charm, an effervescent personality, a charming smile. A bright, fresh, ever optimistic demeanour. You'll probably have very white teeth. Number two, you are rich. You're absolutely loaded with lolly. Big house, flash car, fancy clobber, maybe even your own yacht or a football team. Number three, if you're blessed in today's terms, you're powerful. You command people, and you pull the strings. You say jump and people ask how high. And you are well connected with powerful others. You walk the corridors of power. Number four, you have wonderful looks and physique. You have a natty hairstyle and a toned body, perhaps like mine. If you weren't born with looks and physique, no problem. From rethatching your bonds to liposuction sucking your blubber to browning or is it oranging up your pasty pallor, you can have a complete makeover and be transformed. Number five, if you're blessed in today's world, you're successful. You're a winner. You can turn your hand to anything. You play a sport and you win. You start a business, you make money. Never mind who you trample over on your way to the top, because survival of the fittest requires ruthlessness. Number six, you're popular, even famous. You have a profile and followers. People hang on to your every tweet and your every purchase. You might even be an influencer and be paid just to share what it's like being you. Number seven, you're trouble-free. Your Facebook page is festooned with pics of you and your wonderful, carefree, happy, smiley life in which everyone and everything comes up smelling of roses, even the dog. Number eight, you are self-confident and self-reliant. You are maverick independent and never dogged by insecurities. No need for faith or any dependency in your life. You are a self-made man or woman. You look after number one by looking to number one. Those are my best guess at what the world's top eight blessings might be. I wonder, firstly, if you recognise any of those blessings in our world. And secondly, and a bit more scarily, do you find yourself stuck in the gravitational pull of any or perhaps all of those eight? As for me, you can see that the rethatch never took hold. And this corset really sometimes pinches. Interestingly, though today technology has changed so much of how we do life, I don't think that the selfish, self-focused, self-reliant and self-righteous focus of humans has changed much at all from Jesus' day, do you? Being blessed in our world is all about image, about being seen and about inflating our pride, building up our ego. In complete contrast, Jesus arrives on the scene and gives us his version of what it means to be blessed here in Matthew chapter 5. Let's get a little bit technical first. The first word in each of the statements in the Beatitude in the Latin is beati, hence Beatitudes, and in the Greek is makarios. Both of these are traditionally translated as blessed. Various of the commentaries that I read decried some of the modern translations of this word as happy or fortunate because they felt, and I quote, those words tended to trivialise the meaning by suggesting a temporary emotional or circumstantial state. They strongly argued that makarios is a state of existence in relationship to God in which a person is blessed from God's perspective, even when he or she doesn't feel happy or isn't experiencing good fortune. In other words, being blessed is not primarily a subjective thing, feeling good or lucky, but being in relationship with the eternal God, having and knowing God's approval irrespective of difficult circumstances. So, let's go through these Beatitudes with the express purpose of seeing how these are or aren't describing us today. Number one, blessed are the poor in spirit. God's approval does not come to those who boast of their spiritual riches or knowledge. On the contrary, Jesus asserts that it comes to those who admit their spiritual poverty. To be poor in spirit is to acknowledge one's total dependence on God for everything. This attitude of humility, often in the face of adversity, is one that Jesus will go on to model perfectly himself, leading Paul to write in this in Philippians chapter 2 under the subheading, Imitating Christ's Humility. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather in humility, consider others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. In your relationship with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. This is so radical. So utterly the polar opposite of the self-promotion that was the order of the day amongst the religious leaders back in Jesus' time and is still the norm, sadly, today. So, brothers, sisters, friends, would the words humble or humility be used by your peers to describe you? Secondly, blessed are those who mourn. In other words, blessed are those who care about others, care about the state of the world, care about their own failings, who care and feel grief. Blessed are those who empathize with others who are in pain and distress. Again, this is such a radical departure from the norm. For example, the situation Jesus related to in the parable of the Good Samaritan. The religious people, the religious leaders walked by on the other side, showing in their hearts they really didn't care. Do you care about the state of your heart and the state of the world, the state of others? Does this prompt you to mourn and grieve? Thirdly, blessed are the meek. Meek has such a bad rap to our 21st century ears. To most of us, meek would indicate a timorous, slightly grovelling demeanour that we would equate perhaps with weak and would therefore be disdainful of. But what meek really means is strong but gentle, rather than aggressive, loud, domineering. This is a particular challenge for some blokes for whom being aggressive, loud and domineering may be a default mode. But Jesus himself exemplifies best what it means to be gentle. He is the lion, awesome in power, but he's also the lamb. Would you be described as gentle? Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Those who realise their lack in attaining right behaviour before God, rather than those who boast of their righteous accomplishments, will receive what they long for. Persons who hunger and thirst are in dire need. They will perish if they're not filled. Such is the passion of those who desire righteousness. Again, does this describe you, or do you hunger for more earthly things? Blessed are the merciful. The merciful are those who demonstrate forgiveness towards the guilty and kindness towards the hurting and needy. The religious leadership in Jesus' day tended towards being merciless because of their demand for rigorous observance of the law. Their motive was actually commendable in that it was driven by a desire for the people of Israel to be pure. But it was inexcusable because what resulted was harshness and condemnation for the very people they should have been trying to rescue. Are you so busy trying to uphold right conduct that you have lost sight of the need to be merciful? Number 6, blessed are the pure in heart. Purity or cleanliness was an important religious theme in Jesus' day. The washing and rewashing of hands is not the preserve of COVID times. With our gels, it was alive and kicking 2,000 years ago. But observing all the Old Testament laws of being clean could easily bypass the most important purity of all, purity of the heart. Jesus declares here that a pure heart is what produces external purity, not vice versa. And he would go on to have many a ding-dong with the Pharisees about their obsessive cleaning of them. Blessed are the peacemakers. This beatitude is not about being a passively peaceful person, but an active reconciler of people. How easily do you get offended by that behaviour or views of others? Are you the one who spreads oil on troubled waters, or the one who throws petrol on the flames? Lastly, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness, and blessed are those who are insulted because of their love for Jesus. The chief marks of those who already live under God's rule and are humility towards God and mercy towards other people. One might expect such humble, merciful people to be highly valued by their fellow humans, but Jesus warns that that will not necessarily be the case. After all, he was a perfect, sinless example and was persecuted to his death. Are you suffering persecution or ridicule for your faith? or possibly more relevantly, do people actually even know you are a Christian? So to summarize, what it means to be blessed according to our present culture, or even the culture of the first century, is quite radically different from what it's from what Jesus spells out. They are chalk and cheese. Which side of the fence do you find yourself on? The way of the world or the radical way of Jesus? If you recognize that you're on the wrong side of the fence, don't beat yourself up, because your honesty has put you in exactly that place of being poor in spirit, of recognizing your inadequacies and of needing God's help. That means you're blessed. Don't try and attain righteousness on your own strength. You can't. Let go of your ego and ask for God's Spirit to come and revive you. Lastly, in this section, we come to these verses on salt and light. Lots of us here, probably most of us, will not see ourselves as evangelists sharing the gospel with hundreds and thousands. We will not see ourselves as prophets or preachers. But Jesus tells us all that we can be salt and light. If you are living Jesus' way, you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. You can't help it. Just being you, blessed by God because you've declared him Lord, poor in spirit, mournful, being gentle, being merciful, you will be the seasoning, the preservative, the fertilizer, the light that relationships need, that communities and societies need. Just being you, conscious of your inadequacies, but more important, conscious too of God's power. Let's take a moment to review. It seems to me that much of what Jesus taught in these Beatitudes can be encapsulated in this one question. From whom or from where are you seeking approval? Is it from the world, from your peers, or from your fan base, or the mirror? Or is it from the God who knows your every thought and yet still loves you? Whose opinion ultimately counts to you? Resisting the lure of the world and its ways is a well-nigh impossible task. The lure is too strong and we are too weak. Go and check out Paul's description of this struggle in Romans chapter 7. But this regular failure on our part is not the final word. Check out these words from the band Mercy Me. There'll be days I lose the battle. Grace says that it doesn't matter because the cross has already won the war. There'll be days I lose the battle. Most days, in fact. Grace says that doesn't matter because the cross has already won the war. Get this. There is nothing that you can do that will make God love you any more than he already does.